Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the ISO's Powering Tomorrow podcast. My name is Terry Young. In each episode, we sit down with our guests to get their perspective on the opportunities and challenges power grids are facing in the midst of the rapid transformation happening in the industry. We'll also learn more about some of the innovative ideas or concepts helping to shape the future of the electricity system. On our last episode, we did something different with a live recording at the Ontario Energy Network's annual luncheon. On today's episode, we decided to go beyond Ontario to get the North American-wide picture of the rapid transformation happening to power grids across the continent. To better understand how the unprecedented level of change in the industry is impacting our neighbors to the south and across Canada, I spoke with Jim Robb, President and CEO of the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, or NERC for short. NERC is responsible for overseeing the reliability and security of the North American power grid. Their area of responsibility spans the continental United States, Canada, and the northern portion of Baja, Mexico, and more than 400 million consumers. With more than 30 years of experience in the power sector, Jim shares his perspective on the rapidly evolving North American grid from his vantage point down at NERC headquarters in Atlanta. Jim, let's start right away with what NERC is, or more appropriately, what the North American Electric Reliability Corporation is, or NERC to us electricity geeks. What is it that NERC's responsible, its mandate? Maybe just touch a bit on that for us, if you don't mind starting there.
Sure. So we've actually been around for a little over 50 years. We were formed following the 1965 blackout that affected New York City. And for the first 40 years of our existence, we worked as kind of a clearinghouse for the industry in developing voluntary reliability standards around the operation of the interconnected electric system. Our world changed significantly following the 2003 blackout in the Northeast. When the United States decided that they wanted to shift to a mandatory standards with enforceable standards, so penalties associated with non-compliances. So we were set up as part of the Energy Policy Act of 2005 by congressional edict in the U.S. And then we operate in Canada under a series of MOUs with the provinces. They're slightly different province to province, but we provide the same sort of oversight to the electric system in Canada that we do in the U.S. But for the most part, we oversee the bulk power system in North America, at least the interconnected systems. So that includes all the continental United States, the bordering provinces in Canada that are interconnected, and then a little bit of Mexico. The northern third of Baja California is integrated in with the California electric system as part of the western grid. So that's kind of an overview of our jurisdiction. The things we focus on, really three major areas. First is the development of reliability standards for the grid, both for reliable operations and planning, as well as cybersecurity. We, in concert with six regional entities around the continent, monitor the utilities to make sure that they stay in compliance with those standards. And then the third part of our third leg of our stool, if you will, is we run what we call the Electricity ISAC, or the Information Sharing and Analysis Center for North America, focused on cybersecurity and situational awareness for the interconnected grid. So that's an overall view of our mandate. We're a nonprofit organization. We're funded through assessments that we make to all of the utilities. We're not a member organization, although we are very stakeholder focused in terms of the work that we do.
So you touched on cybersecurity there for a moment, and I'll come back to this, but when you talked about 65 and the blackout that hit the Northeast and the origins in Ontario, if you will, I go back to 2003 and the blackout, and I think we in Ontario were able to say at that time, not here this time. time. We returned
the favor.
There you go. But that was one of the first things I think we were able to say, and we said it. But with respect to the blackout in 2003, and I know you've only been CEO at NERC for several years, but you've been in the business for over 30 years. Can you talk a little bit about what you've seen with respect to reliability standards and the development of those standards since that blackout? 17 years ago now?
Yeah, well, I think the interesting thing about electricity is our relationship with it as a society has evolved significantly. And you know, one of the formative experiences for me was living in New England in 2011 when we had a freak snowstorm in October that knocked the electric grid out. It was about a two-week restoration in Connecticut, which is where I was working. And what I realized through that experience was just how different the relationship society has with electricity has become as the world has become more digitized and more interconnected. So if you think about it, you know, when we were kids, whenever there was a power outage, you know, we'd read books by candlelight, we'd cook on the grill, we'd play Monopoly with our parents, and it was almost kind of like camping. You know, it was kind of it didn't happen often, but when it did, it was kind of a unique experience. And now, the way the world has evolved, when you lose power, it's a really, really bad day. You know, your kids can't entertain themselves anymore because they don't know how to play Monopoly unless it's online. Communications come to a halt because most people don't have landlines anymore. They rely on internet VoIP for telecommunications if they even have a landline. Eventually, cell phone batteries die and don't get recharged. You can't get money from the ATMs. You can't pump gas in your car. If you live in a place like Connecticut, where many homes are on wells, you know, you can't get water. Sewage starts to back up because the waste wells and so forth start to have problems. You know, commerce stops because so much of the world is digitized. So electricity has become kind of really sort of the fundamental underpinning of all aspects of modern society. We usually think of in the world of security, kind of three critical sectors being electricity, telecommunications, and finance. Then I agree that those are the three most critical, but of those, electricity is fundamentally the most. Now, the one thing that I would say about the electric industry that makes it different than other sectors is that we have a strong history of collaboration. At some level, it started when we started to interconnect the systems after World War II. But it became really clear to operators of the system that they need to have good situational awareness of their neighboring systems, so they know what's going on all around them, so they can take all the appropriate actions within their own system to keep resources balanced, maintain frequency, you know, all those things that are important to reliability. And the sector takes reliability enormously seriously. So the reliability standards, if you will, were put in place really to assure a common level of performance on important dimensions related to reliability and eventually security. The standards themselves are not really meant to first of all, they're not really intended to create anyone needing to create a moonshot or do anything unnatural. In many ways, they codify what we would call, in the U.S. anyway, good utility practice. But they assure a common level of performance in making sure that not only your own operations, but importantly, the operations of your neighboring systems are all held to a common standard. And that's really the philosophy that we try to take to the standard setting process.
And so when you look at this and you look at that common level, if you will, I think what makes it more challenging too as well is the number of jurisdictions or that have to be part of that common level. We, you know, we'll say that someone in Florida, you know, eats something that's that they shouldn't, it's Ontario that feels the heartburn. And it gives you that sense of how interconnected some of these our jurisdictions are.
Correct. I mean, it really is kind of a miracle, I think, that the electric system works as well as it does, given how complex it is, how many jurisdictions there are, and how many participants. I pulled this together for a talk I gave at an international conference at EEI, sponsored last year, and the statistics are really remarkable. So we have three countries that have to collaborate. We have four different interconnections across North America, the eastern and western interconnections, which are the two largest, plus Quebec and Texas or ERCOT. 17 reliability coordinators that have real-time authority over the systems in their wide area of purview. 73 balancing authorities that are working every day, every minute to make sure that resources and load are balanced and that there are adequate reserves in place to guard against any major contingencies. 184 transmission operators, nearly 300 distribution companies, and over almost 1,000 generation owners. And all of those parties have to come together and operate in a coordinated manner for us to be able to deliver electricity to people's homes, to do everything that we take for granted, you know, throwing on the light switch and having the lights come on, running the toaster, what have you. It's really quite a remarkable machine that's been built.
It really is. And you hope that of all of those thousands of participants and thousands of those involved, you got to hope that someone's not having a bad day at any given time. Because, as I said, the interconnectedness of this does drive, as we saw in 2003, a lot of people can feel that.
Right. Well, and in fact, one of the core premises of the NERC reliability standards, nearly all of which have been adopted by Canada, either in whole or with some, you know, provincially appropriate modification, is that they're really made to, designed to make sure that when something bad happens, and things are happening on the grid all the time, right? Given the complexity of the machine I just described, there are always issues to be managed across the system. Sometimes weather related, sometimes operational. And our goal really is to make sure that kind of the catchphrase is what happens in LA stays in LA, right? So that things don't cascade across the system. That was really the failing of 2003, where a vegetation contact in Ohio managed to knock out the Northeast. 1965, it was a relay that misoperated in outside of Toronto that knocked out New York City. And then the last major cascading event we had was in 2011 when a operator in Arizona inadvertently skipped a step in a maintenance procedure and managed to knock out San Diego. Those are the kinds of events that our standards are designed to prevent. So that kind of when an event happens, it gets isolated and contained, and the rest of the system operates seamlessly around it.
And well, as our former chief operating officer of ours, Kim Warren, used to say, we're in a business you can never say never. But on the other hand, since 2011, it sounds like it's been a pretty good track record in terms of isolating incidents and stopping them from going further.
Yeah, I think that the industry takes its responsibilities very, very seriously. Both with respect to kind of planning and operations of the system, as well as security, and I think the performance of the system, you know, reflects one, very good engineering, very good operations, and a strong executive commitment to ensuring that the standards are met and exceeded in many cases, and that the systems work well together. And that's really key for making this complicated machine work the way we need it to.
You know, I'm hesitant to use one of the most over-asked questions that interviewers can ask people, but I'm going to ask it anyways. What keeps you awake at night, Jim?
It's no question. It's the security side of the equation. You know, I think the reliability, reliable planning and operations of the system. The issues are largely well known. Of course, the system is changing quite a bit with the change in the resource mix and the shift away from large central station generation to more distributed generation, more variable generation, and so forth. But those are known engineering problems that that we can work through. The security side of the equation is very different, though, because while on the reliability side of the house, we're working against preventing stochastic events, you know, just, you know, things that will happen over time. In the security space, we're trying to defend against known adversaries. And, you know, every sector has to worry about punks, thugs, and crooks, you know, trying to get into their system. In our case, the electric system in many ways feels like we're on the front line of a global war. And, you know, we're dealing with nation state adversaries with nation state capabilities. You know, we have the big four, Iran, China, Russia, North Korea. And, you know, the one thing that I've learned is that bad guys are bad. They're not stupid. So while we have a very good set of defenses in place surrounding the security of the grid, we have persistent, determined adversaries that are working every day trying to penetrate the system and compromise it. So that's the one area that that I think keeps every executive up at night, is the vulnerability and the risk we have to a major cyber event.
So with respect to that, as you look at the you know, the very real danger that's facing us now with respect to cyber, you know, what do you as they grow in frequency, as they get much more sophisticated, what are some of the challenges you foresee to safeguarding the interconnected power grid?
Staying a step ahead of them all the way. And I think this sounds trite, but the industry and the companies that participate in it have to be ever vigilant. And really make sure that, one, that they have the right defense in depth strategies in place to protect their systems, but more and as importantly, that they're continuing to train their workforce to be cognizant of and aware how their individual actions can compromise the system. You know, it's very interesting with all of the sophisticated tools and so forth that we have in place to monitor our operating systems and our enterprise systems. The biggest vulnerability we have as an industry are the thousands and thousands of people that show up to work every day. The most common method of attack is our phishing emails that just require one person to click on a corrupt attachment to introduce malware into the system, harvest credentials, which in some cases may also be used in the operating technology side of the equation. And so there's a big set of issues here around just making sure that workforce hygiene is what it needs to be. And then the other big issue and the other big risk that we're increasingly attuned to are the risks associated with supply chain. We don't make a whole lot of electronic components in North America anymore. We're dependent on foreign suppliers for if not full pieces of electric equipment like large transformers and so forth. You know, certainly the components, a lot of the microprocessing chips and so on and so forth come from Asia. And the process of getting control and security around an entity's supply chain is kind of the next big area of focus for us right now.
So, Jim, I think I want to close a bit future focused here and to start thinking about 10 to 15 years out. And you've already touched on some of the changes that we're seeing in the sector, the many more participants, the increase in distributed resources. We're certainly seeing an increase from the demand side in terms of being able to participate in the market. And we're seeing more decarbonization associated with the grid. Ontario, we have a supply mix that's 94% carbon free. And so we're seeing a lot in that area. But if you look down the road, so 10, 15 years, what do you see some of the changes taking place and what this interconnected grid will look like?
Well, I think you hit on the three big ones. I use the notion of kind of a 3D transformation of the electric system, much more digitized in terms of the industrial controls that we use to run the system, much more distributed with the expansion of resources that are on the distribution system or in many cases behind the meter, particularly with consistently improving economics of solar. And then decarbonized, which in general also translates into variable energy production. And I think those are the main things we're going to see. I think the big question in my mind is, at what point do we find a storage technology that can be deployed at very large scale that changes the core dynamics of the industry, right? Because right now we have to generate power instantaneously with its consumption. And at some point, a battery technology that can be deployed locally and at large scale will really change the nature of the industry. I don't think we have that technology today. I mean, lithium-ion batteries are certainly starting to play a role in balancing supply and demand, but I think at the end of the day, there's going to be a new technology that's fundamentally more economic and more easily scaled, and I think that'll make a big difference to the system. The real issue that we're concerned about as we move from where we are today to that system that I just described is the length of the transition period to get there. And importantly, until that storage technology is available and deployed at very, very large scale, the role of natural gas in balancing the system. And I think that's one of the big challenges we have right now is ensuring that we have adequate natural gas infrastructure. We have plenty of natural gas supply. Between the U.S. and Canada, we're awash in natural gas, but it's becoming increasingly difficult to build the infrastructure to make sure that the gas is where it needs to be in order to provide electric reliability. And so I think that's one of the tensions we have in the system right now in this transition. But I think the end game is relatively clear. A highly distributed generation mix, much more dependent on wind and solar and other renewable decarbonized fuels than what we have today, and one that's much more knitted together via digital controls. And, of course, that creates a whole bunch of issues, one around security, because every control system becomes then now a target and potentially a vulnerability. And the nature of system operations will change significantly. I mean, right now we have a system that we largely have a known load and a reasonably well-known resource mix, and we just have to make sure that we're optimizing that deployment. As we look forward, we're going to have, a much more uncertainty around what load actually is, because much of it will be masked by distributed resources. And our generation mix is going to be variable as well. So we need to change an awful lot of our planning and operating models to take into account just a much more probabilistic, system in real-time operations than the way we think about it today. So it's going to be a real challenge, but it brings with it an awful lot of exciting opportunities.
It certainly does. Jim, thanks for talking to us today. Thanks for sharing your perspectives. It was great talking to you.
Okay, well, thanks, Terry. I appreciate the opportunity.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. To stay up to date on the latest initiatives taking place across Ontario's electricity industry, we invite you to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, or by visiting us at www.ieso.ca. Thanks for listening.